Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Sound Health Options Show with Sherry Edwards and Richard Olson, brought to you this week by N-Voice, Personality Profiler. What do you really want out of life? And move through hidden agendas quickly. This is the show for April 17th, 2011. Welcome back, everybody, and good morning, Sherry.
Good morning. You got me eating.
Sorry about that. I tried to stretch that open out so that you could finish that last perfectly cooked piece of, you know, smoked salmon.
I couldn't resist.
Hard to not.
How are you over there in radiation land?
Doing pretty well with the help of, with the assistance of the Radical Rescue Program and the amazing chart of information you put together with the frequency equivalencies for the exposures. I haven't tested my, I took a print this morning, but I haven't as of yet run it, so I'm not sure what's up, but I know that I'm feeling much better. That mix of flu and reaction that I had going was certainly tricky, but I really feel like having the chart and being able to test myself every day and balance myself every day has really helped tremendously.
We're getting some reports in from L.A., but you guys up there in the north are being hit way harder.
It certainly seems like it, from what I can tell from looking at the jet stream maps and everything that's going on. The Pacific Northwest part of the western United States seems to be hammered way more than Southern California, and I guess it's just because of the flow of the jet streams. Mm-hmm. Do you have anybody taking any prints up in Canada?
Yes.
West coast of Canada?
Yes, we have some people in Vancouver, and they're getting it about the same as you are.
Okay. Yeah, it seems to be sort of going from Bay Area or a little south of Bay Area, and north seems to be the big hit of the jet stream.
Yeah, I think this is an incredible thing that we can do with this early warning system. Not only this, but any time they put out some HARP thing or whatever else is going on, we can help warn people ahead of time.
I think it's really, for those of you that are listening who don't know what we're talking about, Sherry and the people at Sound Health Options came up with a program right after the Fukushima tsunami and earthquake and meltdowns and everything that's going on, a radical rescue program for monitoring and observing the exposures of radiation isotopes, and also a chart with those and frequency equivalent substances to help balance those things out. When I say substances, I mean things like NADH and ATP and cell salts and supplements that are available over the counter. And it's really a huge, for me, it's been, I live north of San Francisco toward the coast, not exactly on the coast, but 20 minutes from the coast. And it's been really empowering to be able to have a program where I can monitor myself, I can see what's going on. If I see something that's elevated, I take supplements that help that. The following day, frequently, it's balanced. Sometimes I have to, you know, I keep following every day, and we've been checking me now for, I was surprised it was as long as it has been. I think more than 20 days of monitoring, and it really is, helped me and the people around me that I've been working with to help them just have that information. It's been really powerful. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I think information is powerful. You know, people are afraid when they don't have enough information to solve their problems or know what they should do next.
And yeah, it is really, it is, I have a hard time using the word funny, but I guess I'll go with that. When I have talked to other people that know me and know some of the other stuff that I've done in terms of being a healthcare practitioner since the let's just say the early 80s, because the late 70s makes me sound way too old, that it's really powerful to have this information. You know, it doesn't. I have some friends and allies who are more along the line of like, I don't want to talk about it. Whereas I'm much more like Sherry is, where I believe information is power, and I like it. I like knowing. I'd much rather know and be able to do something with it than just go, oh, well, you know, I'll pretend that's not going on. It's really going on.
Let's talk about that on a show, a whole show, and get some people's opinions about why people like to bury their head and not look at themselves or what's really going on. I think our guest, too, can bring up some of that. Why people
yeah.
don't want to look.
That seems like the perfect intro for me to introduce the guest. Thank you so much. Barbara Hofmeister has come up with a book, To Be or Not to Be, The Choice is Yours. And sort of a byline from everything I've read about her is, you want more out of life. And the book, which was launched on July 10th and has reached the Amazon bestseller list in four categories. This book is about living a life of choice and purpose. It takes the reader through a step-by-step process to discover what they truly want in life, what has been holding them back, and how they can move forward towards their destiny and fulfillment. To Be or Not to Be, The Choice is Yours reminds us that we have choice. Welcome, Barbara.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm showing her book for those of you on WebEx with us, and that's always an option for people. They can watch the show as well as hear it. And if you want to join us on WebEx, go to soundhealthoptions.com, and the link is right on the front under Blog Talk Radio. So I'm showing the sunny book to all of our people who are watching. It's a beautiful orange, my favorite color, and it's got a sun with sunglasses on, and bright and happy and cheerful. What made you choose that cover? Because that's a beautiful cover.
Thank you. Well, I was looking for something that I love orange too, so I wanted an orange cover, but something that would sort of stand out a little bit from the regular books, so that maybe people would pick it up, even if it's just for the sunny color, you know.
Well, usually orange, for all the people who follow us, we do vocal profiling, and orange indicates somebody who wants to help.
Mm-hmm.
The helper person, the spreader of information, which looking at your books, you certainly are in that category.
Yes, maybe that's a reason why I love orange so much. Half of my house is orange, so yeah. I think it looks very friendly. The cover,
yeah.
The sun. It's something that children have made actually that summer. That sun, and I found it somewhere online and asked for permission to use it, and yeah, and there it is, and I love it. Definitely, I think it gives also the. For me, it represents what I want to give to people, that there is hope, that there's fun in life, there's joy in life, and that they have a choice. Because too many people believe that they have no choice. They're stuck in a situation they don't like, and they say, what can I there's nothing I can do about it. So I have to stay in this unpleasant situation for the rest of my days. But that's not true, and I've proven it through my own journey. And there's plenty of other people that have gotten themselves out of a rut and are now living a better and happier life. So that is the message, actually, in a nutshell. It's about how to get your dreams back and the courage to make them come true. And both is equally important.
Well, you talked about your own journey. Is that what set you about trying to help other people?
Oh, definitely, because... First of all, I come from communist Germany, and I was born behind the Berlin Wall. My parents dragged me over to the Western, to the free world, but freedom isn't free, as we all know. And in the beginning, it was extremely painful for me as a child, because I you know, my father forced us to live his dream. I didn't want any part of it because in Western Germany, my parents were working day and night, and I was left to my own devices in the middle of a strange city that I didn't know, in a small attic room that had to do for the whole family for the first few years. So that was very unpleasant, and I was abused as a child, raped at 16, and all that together made me into a very insecure young woman. I had low self-esteem, little belief in myself. And, yeah, when you look at me today, you know, there is a massive difference there. And I started my own self-healing process when a friend gave me a book in 1978 by Dr. Wayne Dyer. And my first reaction was insult. You know, I felt insulted. I thought, why is she giving me a self-help book? I don't need a self-help book. You know, there's nothing wrong with me. And I suppose she saw something that I didn't see and didn't want to see. And that refers to what you said earlier on about people not wanting to see what is happening. You know, they put their head in the sand because it's easier to ignore it and just pretend that everything is good. And that's what I've been doing until that moment. I've been pretending that everything was good while it wasn't. And that book really started me. It gave me this revelation that I'm not alone, because it was as if Dr. Dyer was talking directly to me. But obviously he wasn't. He didn't know me. So I realized that I'm not alone. There must be other people out there with similar challenges in life. And that gave me hope, and that opened me up and started me on this journey of self-healing, first of all, and later on, of course, of sharing. But I've been on this journey now for 33 years. And I am very glad that I did, that I did go on it.
Well, Wayne Dyer is a good guy. Do you have an opinion about why some people don't want to see? Does it really require some kind of breakdown?
No, it doesn't, but it seems to help. I mean, it's really true. It's, you know, we learn from two things. We learn from joy. When we have extreme pleasure with something, we want to repeat that experience. So we're willing to shift something in our life so we can repeat that experience. Or we learn from pain. When we are in enough pain, we are willing to change our life. In both cases, we can turn our life around in seconds. But it takes that, yeah, it takes either the pain or it takes that extreme joy, but pain seems to be more powerful. And most people change in extreme moments in their life, you know, the death of a loved one, a serious illness, a bankruptcy, a divorce, a painful divorce, you know, that kind of, those kind of moments in life when we actually reflect on where we are and what am I doing here, how did I get here?
What do you think the difference is between people who are forced to change and people who are willing to change?
Well, it's less painful, first of all, because it's a more gradual process. If you're forced to change, then you might fight it more than you do when you actually make a decision. You say, I want to change. I know that there's more out there. Life has more to give, and I want to take part, you know, I want to be part of it. So I'm willing to change, and I'm willing to do the work that is involved in getting there. While when you're forced to change, you don't think, you just do it, because you need to do it in most cases. You know, it's absolutely essential for you to get out of this painful situation.
When people are in their life and they seem to be sort of complacent and hum-ho and okay, are there some indicators that say, okay, let's change a bit? I mean, do we have to have this big crash, or are there some smaller indicators for people?
We don't have to have the big crash. I mean, in my case, it was my, as I call it, my midlife crisis that made me seriously change my life, you know, seriously reflect on my life and change it. It can be something like that, you know, a special birthday, a special celebration, a special event in our life that makes us reflect. But it doesn't have to be anything. It can be people listening to our radio show today and going, to get the book and actually working through it, and that will change their life because it's a workbook. So, you know, they might not even have any specific reason. They might just do it because they feel they have to be more. This is what happened to me. When I had my midlife crisis around my 40th birthday, it was because I wanted to invite all my old friends because I lived abroad, and I thought, okay, I will invite all the people that I met in the last 10, 15 years since I've been traveling and celebrate, make it a big party. And because I had to go through all my old address books, I obviously reflected a lot on how I met the people, how our relationship went, and so on. And that started me reflecting on my life and where am I taking it? And I'm going to be 40, and what have I done with it? Am I wasting it? Do I amount to anything? What is the legacy that I'm leaving behind? Is there a legacy I'm leaving behind? Who have I become? Is that what I really want? You know, all these questions that we ask ourselves, or, you know, some people don't, but that I did ask myself, and I wasn't happy with what I saw. So I thought, okay, time to turn around. And I did. Doesn't have to be that painful. It wasn't that painful for me. It was just a couple of days of reflection and making a decision.
Do you think everybody has this yearning to make a difference in other people's lives and in the life of the planet?
I don't know about that. I don't think, well, I believe that deep down everyone has that. But I don't think that everyone is aware of it. And also, it's not, first of all, it's not about helping others. That can be, in many cases, I notice that people that are helping others haven't helped themselves yet. So that doesn't work too well. You know, people with a helper syndrome, quite often, they haven't helped themselves yet. They don't respect themselves enough. They don't feel love for themselves. They don't have that appreciation for their life and for who they are. And then it's difficult for them to really help people. I mean, help people on a deeper level. I believe, first of all, you need to help yourself. First of all, you need to come to that point when you are happy with who you are, when you really appreciate your life, when you love your life, and then you have the power, and then you have immense power to help others.
Do you think any of that's age-related?
No, I believe it helps when you get older. You have much more life experiences to share, you know, and you will not be thrown off track so easily. But I have seen a couple of young people that that are working in my field and are really, really good. One of them I know had a life-changing near-death accident at a young age, and that totally turned him around. And I understand that because he went so deep into the pain and into the, you know, moment of almost leaving that, that totally turned him around, and he's pretty amazing. And another one is the son of Tony Robbins, and I mean, he's been in this environment all his life since he was born, so it doesn't really surprise that he's got that. But normally, yes, it helps when you're older and have more experience, obviously.
I think a lot of us who are over 50 or so were taught, though, at an early age that thinking of yourself first is very selfish and that you don't want to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then I see the younger kids today, and a lot of them have this entitlement kind of personality that the world owes me, you owe me, I can have what I want and don't get in my way.
Mm. Well, I think both are not quite right, because you have to first love yourself before you can love others. You have to first appreciate yourself before you can appreciate others, and so on. That is a fact. But it has nothing to do with being egoistic. This is what we've been taught when we were young, you know, that you shouldn't think of yourself first. And that's totally different, because that was sort of looked upon as if you're an egoist. You just want everything for yourself, but that's not true, is it? What I mean is that you have such a deep root, you are so grounded that you have the power and you have the capacity to really give and share. So that has nothing to do with being egoistic. It's quite, I think, it's totally the opposite. But I know, I mean, I've been told that too when I was a kid and a young woman, you know, you shouldn't think of yourself first and you should think of the others first and blah, blah, blah. What you see in the kids today, that they believe, or some, that they believe that they are entitled to everything and the world owes them, well, that's a shift in our society, and this is something that you see only in the Western world. You don't see that worldwide, and I travel very extensively. You see that in the West, because we had it so good for so many years. I mean, even here in Germany, it's been 65 years since the war, and you know, they have no real problems except for the ones they make themselves. So the entitlement is just as bad on the other extreme as it is when you think that you have no right to think of yourself. Both don't work.
There's two sides of this, though. My husband often uses a saying on me from Camus that says, "But what is happiness except the single harmony between a man and the life he leads?" And he's perfectly happy to be out there playing tennis and golf and riding his motorcycles. And, you know, I would like some time with him. I'd like the grass mowed once in a while. So I'm not happy with his happiness. So, you know, there's two sides of this. I think if you have a partner, there ought to be some give and take.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I totally agree with you. There always has to be a give and take. But I don't think that I said anything in the opposite direction. I mean, it's good that he's happy, and I'm sure that you are happy that he is happy. But I understand that you want a part of him too, and you want to be part of this happiness that he experiences, obviously. Yeah, in most cases a good talk can solve that.
Tried that. We've been together about 40 some years, so
uh-huh.
You know, just sort of fell into it. While you were talking here, we did something with your voice. We did a profile.
Mm-hmm.
You frequencies of your voice, and we're sharing that with the audience now. It says you have the intuitional ability to hear beyond the words people are speaking. You are guided by an inner source of strength. Actively seeking the answers to life is a priority to you. You like to get things done but need a plan first. You don't like people interfering with the way you want to get things done. You don't mind helping, but you don't want to be kept on a schedule or a plan that's not your own. You don't always take time for the spiritual side of life. Balance is important. You have an ability to allow your spirit to carry you when the body is weak. You do for others because they ask, not because they deserve your time. You do for others more quickly than yourself. That's that D note in your voice.
Mm-hmm.
Indications of some cellular oxygen that needs monitored. Any of that sound like you?
Sounds very much like me, yeah.
Just from your voice. I just thought I'd share we were doing that.
Excellent.
You need things to be very useful. When we look at your chart, you have a lot of G-sharp in your chart, along with Carly Simon. And you need things to be very useful and very fair and very balanced. And I think as I look through your workbook, that's what you have presented to people, a way to find that sharing and that balance. So would you talk about your book for a bit?
Oh, sure. With pleasure. I think that you're totally right, because I want things to be practical. I want things to be usable. And what I found is that in a lot of self-help books, I mean, obviously in 33 years, I've picked up hundreds of self-help books that I read. And in a lot of them, they tell you what to do, but they don't show you how to do it. And I found that really frustrating. So you just gave me an explanation why I found it so frustrating. And one day I was having breakfast with an American friend of mine, and he said, and we were discussing this, and I said, you know, I just bought these new books, and it's just the same over and over again. You know, I find it frustrating. They promise you the path, and they don't give it to you. They don't deliver because they don't show you how. And he said, well, why don't you write the book? And I said, yeah, okay, maybe I will. And then we talked about other stuff, and a little later he looked at me and he said, when are you going to write that book? And I thought, yeah, okay. And he left to meet some friends, and I actually sat down and thought about it. And I thought, yeah, he's right. I can't complain that something doesn't exist without being willing to actually make it exist, you know, put it into existence, because that would be against what I stand for. I mean, I want to walk my talk, so I can't complain without doing anything about it. And this is when I started. On that very day, I wrote the outline and the table of content for the book. And it's called To Be or Not To Be, The Choice Is Yours, because I believe that we all have choices in life at all times, even in the bad times. And I want to really wake people up to that truth, that they have a choice. And too many people, especially in the last few years, you know, with recession and everything that's going on, they are so fearful, and they are in bad situations, they are in bad moments of their life. And I want to really give them the tools and techniques that they need that will get them out of that situation. Obviously, they have to do it themselves. The book is not going to do it for them. But the book gives them all the tools and techniques. It's very practical. It's very easy to understand because I wrote it as I speak. English is not my first language, so I use very easy vocabulary. And I gave them the tools that I could put in a book that people can use by themselves. And it's working because I get amazing feedback from my readers. So, yeah.
We have a question. We've got a couple of chats going, and then people are writing to my email. And there's a question I think is really interesting. Is weight gain an indication of happiness, of unhappiness with your life?
Not necessarily. But if she's unhappy, or if she or he is unhappy with gaining weight, then they have to look what makes them gain weight. Obviously, I mean, we only gain weight when we eat more than we burn up. So if we eat more calories than we are actually using, if we put more energy into our body that we're using up, we gain weight. Why do we do that? I know some people that lose weight when they're unhappy, and I know other people that gain weight when they're unhappy because they start eating chocolates and they start eating all kinds of things that they don't like. But I think that you are more higher educated on that part of it because you are into health, so you will probably be able to give them better advice. But it doesn't generally have to do with happiness.
I think it has to do with a lot of things. Biochemistry, we can check out here. Emotionality kinds of things, we can check out here. And we've done that before in some of our classes. But one of the things I think about health and happiness, I think depression is wonderful because it tells you you're going the wrong direction. Time to stop and take account of what's going on. And so I always tell people to enjoy their depressions because some change is happening. So I think it's a combination. I've seen depression just totally be biochemistry, and you can straighten it up by, you know, giving them B6 or something. But I think the emotions are an integral part of that. I think emotion sometimes drives our nutrition.
Oh, sure. Sure, it also drives our appetite. Like I said, some people lose weight, other people put on weight because they have different appetite when they are emotionally charged, whether it's in happiness or whether it is in pain. Depression, well, I mean, I can't agree with you that depression is a good thing. Depression is a good thing if you're actually looking out for it and you say, okay, I'm in this moment where I'm feeling really down. What happened? What got me here? And what? How can I get myself out? But I've seen clinically depressed people that could not get out of bed anymore. You know, they were running around in their pajamas for weeks. And not running around, they were just sort of hanging around at home. They didn't want to talk to anybody. They didn't want to be with anybody. And that is not a good thing. And in that moment, they are not capable to get themselves out of the situation.
I think things like then resentment and dread would be things that say, okay, I need to make a move. But can you need to make a move when you're in joy, too?
Oh, yeah. We actually make moves. We make change in our life with two things. Either it's joy or it is pain. Of course, it's more obvious when it is pain because those situations are, well, are much more in our face. But we also get motivated by joy. If we enjoy something so much that we want to experience it again, then we are willing to make sacrifices to make it happen. We are willing to go that extra mile to make it happen. So, yes, both are motivators.
There's another question here. It's a big, long one, but I'll try to pare it down. It's about, do you have to make a big move, like change jobs or change your city to do this? Does your book tell you how to do it just by sitting still where you are?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. No, you don't have to change your job. It doesn't have to do anything with your job. You might want to change your job once you're in the process because you realize that something else entices you much more than what you're doing, and you will start to see opportunities where you can actually go into that. But no, I don't want anybody to make drastic changes. Let's first of all find out what you really want. I mean, the book starts off with becoming clear of where you want to take your life. And as you become clearer and clearer on that, and that takes more than one sitting. I mean, it's actually in three different chapters. And I give lots of different techniques to become clear on that. Why? Because I find that about 90 to 95% of people in the Western world, and I can generalize that because I've spoken to thousands of people in my life trainings, and this is what I find wherever I go, except in Asia, there is slightly different. But in the Western world, we have about 90 to 95% of people don't know where they are taking their life. They have no clear direction where they're going. And then they're surprised that they wake up at 40, 50, or 60, and they wonder what happened to their life. Where did it go? What happened to all my dreams? What happened to all the things that I wanted to do? So in order to avoid that, I want them to become clear at whatever moment they pick up the book. This is what we first start working on. Because when we are clear, when we have a big picture of our life, a big vision that we are striving for, then it's much easier to overcome challenges, much easier to deal with problems because they are not so overwhelming anymore because we have a clear direction that we're walking towards. And we can take baby steps, doesn't make any difference. Don't have to run or jump. We can take small steps. And for that, it's not necessary to change jobs or change towns or change countries or anything like that, but it might become your choice.
So, and this is actually a workbook for
mm-hmm.
people. Could
mm-hmm.
you talk about that yeah but in chapter 2?
Yeah, sure. Yeah but has to do with our inner voice, and we all have one, our subconscious, that gives us these little nagging messages at times. Like you want to do something different, and it says, yeah, I know you want to go running with your friend, but you are much too fat for that, but you are too old for that, but you are not fit enough for that. You know, this, yeah, but, this is how I combined it, yeah, but. It's our inner voice, and our inner voice is actually only there for our survival. It's programmed for survival. And it doesn't empower us, especially when we're adults and we can make conscious choices of what we really want. When we make those choices, fears will come up, and these little messages will come up. Our inner voice will come up, and it will tell us, yeah, but you don't have the right education. Yeah, but you're too old. Yeah, but who wants to listen to you? Yeah, but. And we need to be able to deal with that. And once you start listening, once you start hearing it, not listening to it, hearing it, you can actually say, oh, okay, thank you, but no thank you. I've made another decision, and I'm consciously walking in another direction, because all these messages, they come from our youth, from our childhood, and they don't serve us anymore when we are adults. So we can make a conscious choice now.
What kind of person needs your book?
Well, good question. I would think that most people need the book. Whether they need it or not, look, some people might not be interested in their personal growth because they say, I'm good where I am. I don't really want to change anything in my life. Everything's okay. And then why should they read something like that? And they would probably not be willing to do the work anyway. But anybody and everybody, no matter what age and no matter what background, that has a feeling there has to be more to life, should read it. And not only read it, but work it. Because just reading will not really do that much. They've got to work it.
So people who just feel like they're existing, they're getting up every day, they're going to work, they're not really getting anywhere, they're not going to leave anything behind for the next generation,
mm-hmm.
Those kinds of people. People
Definitely.
Can get a preview of your book, can't they?
They can get a preview. I'm not sure if that's still up, but it's probably up on the book website. And that is at www.thetobebook.com, thetobebook.com. And they should be able, but they have to check the website. I can't remember now on which page it is. They should be able to get the first 40 pages for free. Yeah.
If, be sure to put the To Be book in front of that. If not, you're going to get some Shakespeare stuff. But it's on the section where it says About Barbara. It's at the bottom of that. We're showing it to the people who are watching the show.
Oh, excellent. Great. Thank you.
I was trying to look at what other kind of, here's one. Does change in ourselves mean we need to make our close people adjust to the new us?
No. And we can't make them adjust to anything anyway. We can adjust ourselves. I mean, we can only change ourselves. But as we change, people around us will change. They will automatically adapt to the different us. What stops people sometimes is that the closest beings around them, their family members and their best friends, when they notice that we are starting a different journey, we are onto something new, they might try to stop you. So just be aware of that. But they are not doing it out of bad intentions. They are doing it because they love you as you are right now. And they don't know how you will be after you change, after you take that new direction. So they might just for that reason, they might try and stop you or hold you back. And that's totally normal. Just respect it, accept it, but do your own thing anyway. I mean, do it anyway, because otherwise you're going to end up at the end of your days thinking, what if? And I can tell from personal experience, before my mom passed away, but also from what I hear from doctors and nurses that work with terminally ill patients, they tell me that the greatest suffering the human being can experience is when at the end of their day, they suffer regret. Regret for all the things that they'd wanted to do with their life but haven't done. So I really don't want anybody to do that, because that can't be medicated. And they say this is the worst that we see. Everything else we can medicate, but we cannot medicate that. And it's pretty painful. So don't let that happen to you. If you have a dream, go for it. If you have that dream, then you have the abilities, you have the skills, and you have the knowledge to actually make it happen. If you believe that you can make it happen.
I've seen people come in here and they're uncomfortable with where they are, but their mm-hmm. partner is very comfortable with them. So they, mm-hmm. the person decides to go to school or whatever their dream is, and it's almost a passive-aggressive kind of thing that the partner being left behind puts blocks up. And until you just confront it and say, you know, this is what you're doing to try to keep me from going to school or whatever, they don't even realize sometimes that they're blocking you.
Mm-hmm.
So your comfort zone isn't necessarily somebody else's. And so the question is, would you suggest that people do this in pairs, as partners?
Well, if both are willing to do it, it would be ideal, obviously. But they have to be aware that the outcome might be different for each person. Like you just said, you know, one person feels very comfortable in a situation and the other person feels uncomfortable and wants a change. So we have to be aware of that and we must be able to respect that and say, okay, then how can we find a compromise that works for both of us? What can we do that works for both? But don't give up. I mean, I really don't recommend to anybody, once they become clear of what is really driving them, what they really want to do with their life, who they want to become, then really they shouldn't be stopped by anything and anybody. And that doesn't mean throw them out of your life, but there are some dream stealers in most of our lives that we might have to say goodbye to or that we might have to see less of.
I also believe that if you're together as a couple, you were drawn together to do something or to learn something. And once that is learned, accomplished, people think that, or society thinks, they ought to stay together. And you really don't. You can part friends. And, you know, I've learned my lessons and this is where we need to go. So I think that's a good lesson for people, too. Richard, I've been hogging our guest. Do you have any questions?
I have questions, but we have to take a very...
I was wondering what happened to you, Richard.
No, I'm here. I'm just listening and absorbing. But we have to take a very brief break, and when we come back from that break, I do have a couple of questions. We'll be right back.
Have you had enough? Our civil and health rights are being ignored at every turn. More than ever, alternative health care services are needed. Please accept our invitation to be a part of the renovation of healthcare in America. Guardian Party members receive free software, free online classes, free monthly newsletter, free forum access. For more about health for the people, by the people, visit us at www.guardiansofthepeople.com.
So my question, I have a number of questions, but I would like you to speak more to the yeah, but, which in my mind serve as a visual, like a big yeti or something, because it is such a big, it's amazing how the information that we receive as we grow up, or the little snippets of information that are tossed us at about you can't, you shouldn't, how that goes into the brain and turns into those big, little tiny things, but such big hairy beasts of yeah, but. So in your book, which I don't have in front of me, do you take people through the process of beginning to learn how to observe that and go beyond it or past it or ignore it or kick it in the head?
Yes, I do, actually, because I had to deal with a lot of earbuds, and they still come up at times. One of the things that I recommend people to do is actually start listening, of course, because you need to be aware before you can change anything. But I recommend that they put a rubber band around their wrist. Not too tight so it doesn't cut in, but put a rubber band around your wrist. And whenever you have one of those disempowering messages come up, or thoughts, they are thoughts in our own head, so obviously they belong to us, but it seems like it's another person that's talking to you. And when those thoughts come up, something that says, like, you can't do that, you're too old, you're too this, you're too that, you're not good enough, you're not worthy, why do you think you are the one, and all this kind of stuff. And for everyone, it's a different message, but we all have them. Then really snap it away. I literally did that once, and I snapped so hard that I drew blood because I was so upset with my own thought process. And I thought, my God, this is still there after all this time, and it's still trying to catch me off guard. And I normally just snap it away because we learn best with pain. And so when you inflict that little bit of pain that the rubber band will cause your wrist, it will train your subconscious not to that these messages aren't welcome. And I kiss my, when I go through something like this, it normally happens a lot when I make a change again in my life, you know, I move countries or relationships or what have you, then I'm really listening to myself talk. And I have that rubber band. You might meet me somewhere in the world and you might see that I'm wearing a rubber band. So it's not something that goes away forever. It gets much less, fortunately. But sometimes in extreme situations, all the earbuds come back up again, and you train them to stay where they should be, somewhere, you know, where you don't hear them, don't have to listen to them. And actually, I believe that over time it changes. Over time, you really get rid of it, of these disempowering thoughts, and you become the real you. You become the powerful person that we are. Behind all these facades, all these walls that we've built around ourselves for protection, but in reality, we're keeping ourselves in.
I think the process of really just even beginning to hear those yeah buts is a huge step alone, because I have seen and watched people in my life. I've had a number of careers. I'm sort of a serial careerist. I guess I would call it. And I've had people, you know, I've gone from one thing when I've gone into something else, and it's people are like, my God, you, what? You're doing this now? And it's, that's just how it's been for me. So I have some sort of drive that allows me to do that. But I still, somewhere along the way, through one of the many processes or techniques or things that I've read about or learned or observed, is that I began to hear the yeah buts, and I can't necessarily negate them, but I at least know they're there. So they're not these little, I would think, because of my foundation as a healthcare practitioner, I think of them as parasites. They're little things that take energy away from you that you're not necessarily aware that are there. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's very, again, empowering to be able to even just know that they're there is the first step to causing them to, like, shine the light on them, open that dark box and shine the light on them, and they kind of go, oh, no, and then they melt, and, you know, then something else will pick up. So I think that's a huge piece.
Richard, when you changed jobs, was it, or vocations, professions, was it because something happened, you got bored, and did the people in your life change with it?
Well, I didn't know I was going to be laying on the couch this morning. Let's see. Yes. Sometimes people changed. There have been people that have known me most of my life who I'm still in contact with who have seen me go through various professions. But there were some times where there were changes. Sometimes it was because of a move or, you know, sometimes I was just, I mean, I went from teaching at a university to going back to being a chef. And the people that had known me at university had known me doing one category of things, but they all knew that I cooked. But they were shocked when I left the academic world to go back to cooking professionally. And that was a big jump for both those people. And yes, that is true that the people, when I went back into the restaurant business, the people from academia sort of fell by the wayside, because that was, you know, they'd come to the restaurant and they'd see me, but it was a different group of people. So it is true, sometimes people changed. But I can't say that it was was a result of a breakup in terms of a relationship that I changed jobs. Sometimes the job change created that. So, yes, that would be correct. I think there's an answer in there.
You're really courageous to have done that. A lot of people feel really stuck, and I think it takes courage to buy this book. It takes courage to use this book. That really takes courage to change.
I think so, too, and I really wanted Barbara to talk to us more about this. I love this line on your website at the tobebook.com, this big headline that says, "Where did my life go?" Talk more about that. I think that it means a whole bunch of stuff to me, so I think it's a very powerful line. I'd like you to talk more about that.
Where did my life go? Yeah, I hear that all the time, that people say, wow, you know, when I was young, I had all those big dreams, and I was sure I could make them happen. But look at me today, I'm 50, and I haven't really done any of that. I started a job because I needed to make some money, and today I'm still stuck in a position that I don't really enjoy. What happened to my life? What happened to my dreams? And that is unfortunate when people feel like that. I mean, not many people are courageous like you, that they actually change careers because they say, okay, I've tested this now. It's not really for me. And the other thing that I did before, like being a chef, that's much more to my liking. I enjoy that more. So let's do that for a while. And that's actually what I'm talking about, you know, making that decision and actually looking at your life and reflecting on your life. What has been, you know, how, where will I be? For instance, if you ask yourself, where will I be if I continue on the road that I've been on in the last few years? Where will I be 5 or 10 years from today? And is that to my liking? Is that what I want? Does that feel good? Or
one on your tombstone.
absolutely. And I actually ask people to write their own, how do you say that, eulogy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can never pronounce it properly. Eulogy? Is that how you say it?
Eulogy or epitaph, yes.
Okay. So I ask people to write their own eulogy. Why? Not because I want them to think about death, quite the contrary. I want them to think about life. Who, you know, what do they want people to say when they're gone? Who do you want to have been? What do you want to tell your great-grandchildren when you're 100 years old about your life? And how close is that to who you are today? And if it isn't that close, you know, don't worry about it, but do something about it. If it's really important to you, then you will turn your life around. Then you will make that shift. But it doesn't have to be a sudden shift. Sometimes a gradual shift will work just as well, or in many cases will work even better.
We have an audience question. What can I do about things that haunt me that I did or didn't do? Is that part of your book?
Yes, we're talking about guilt here and past experiences that are still hurting us. And yes, we need to let go of that, definitely, yes. I can give you just one little story. Maybe that will already help. And that is, I learned how to let go of what happened in the past through a story that someone told me. And that was in Madagascar, I think, they catch apes with a very small trap, and the only thing that fits into that trap is a banana and the hand of the ape when he makes it long. You know, when it's empty, you can make your hand long, and the ape can do the same. And they go into that little trap, into a small hole that lets them go, and grab the banana. And then they hold on to that banana for dear life in the real sense of the world. They don't let go of the banana anymore. And they stay there sometimes 1 or 2 days until the hunter comes and actually just picks the ape. And all they had to do is let go of that stupid banana and take the hand out the same way they put it in. And, yeah, and while I'm telling you, I've gone through the physical motions, and I actually open my hand and look at my hand, and I say thank you for the experience, and I let it go. Because guilt is a terrible emotion that can be extremely destructive for us.
We only have a few minutes left. Can you tell people your website, how to contact you, and some of your upcoming events?
Sure. Well, first of all, book, again, is called To Be or Not to Be, The Choice is Yours, and the subtitle is Get Your Dreams Back and the Courage to Make Them Come True. You can get it on Amazon, and you can also get it on the book website, thetobebook.com. You can find me on BarbaraHoffmeister.com. That is with one F. And from there, that's my hub site, so from there you can find me everywhere on the Internet. Or you can just Google me, and I'm sure that you will find some information on how to reach me there. My next event is in the States, actually. I'm speaking at a big event, and I'm super excited about it, and that is the Festival of Enlightenment in June in Colorado. And I call it the Woodstock for the mind, because that's what it is for me. And it's a seven-day event, 7 days and seven nights. So it's a real vacation for people in the mountains of Colorado, absolutely beautiful setting. There will be about 55 speakers there, and they will speak of all different areas of personal development or of a person, health included, fitness included, but a lot of it will be mental stuff. It will be things like, you know, how you can live your dream life, 7 days and seven nights, and fantastic music. So a very special event, and it's a non-profit event. That means that the profits that are made, if any are made, will go to charity, and none of the speakers are getting paid. I'm flying from Germany to be there because I really believe in this event so much. I want to share my experience. I want to share my knowledge with everybody, and I will give 6 workshops and 2 keynotes, so I'm going to be super busy in that week. And, yeah, so I hope that people will come to that event because it's really, really special. The website for it is festivalofenlightenment.com, very easy to find. Lots of fantastic speakers there, people that can help you for sure, and take your family. There's a youth festival parallel to it, so also the children will be entertained and motivated and inspired, and, yeah. I can get to know everybody in person.
We are showing the site now for those of you who are watching. If you have a blog here, do you blog back to people, or can they join the blog and ask you questions?
Oh, sure, yeah, with pleasure. Would be wonderful. That's BarbaraHoffmeister.com/blog. And again, it's Hoffmeister with one F. /blog, yeah, and they can just join and ask me questions or comment on the posts and ask questions there. And I'm doing a new project right now that's called Moments to Be. It will eventually be an audiobook, but I've just started a couple of weeks ago, and I'm posting it's short audio sessions, just 1 to 3 minute sessions that I am right now posting on my blog also, so that people can sample my ideas. And if they have questions or topics they want me to talk about, this is the moment to ask me, because I'm always looking for new ideas, you know, what I can talk about for these moments to be. And, yeah, and I would be happy to have them on my blog, sure.
Well, we're out of time. It's been incredible having you on the show. We have to do a couple of announcements, but I've got one last question. People want to know if you do private sessions with people.
I do private sessions whenever time permits. So I do group coaching, and I have a mastermind group that I run twice a year. The next one starts in July. That's for, you know, the people that really want to go forward and want to do it fast. Otherwise, yes, I do one-on-ones whenever time permits. When I'm in Germany, definitely. When I'm traveling, it's a little bit more challenging.
I think what they were really asking is if you're going to do any private sessions at this conference in Colorado.
Well, if time permits, yeah, I'd be happy to.
Okay.
Sure.
Richard, do you have any last questions?
No, I'm still on the couch thinking about my life.
Well, please join us for our next happy hour where we do vocal profiles for the public on April 26th. That's from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and it will be live. You'll be able to watch it at the same time. Our next Guardian class is this evening. It's arthritis. And we're going to be doing some allergy testing for people with things like aspartame. And that's 6 to 8 p.m. For all of you guardians who are going to join us. The next guardians, it will be about allergies. And remember that you can go back and pick up any of these monthly classes that you would like. Just get in touch with, well, just use my email, sherryonair@gmail.com, and I'll get it to the right person. We do have free preview demo classes coming up, one on April 20th, one on April 28th, and then one on May 5th. So on those two, we provide vocal prints for people who are in attendance. Our website, soundhealthoptions.com, and Richard's website, we should talk about more someday, Talk to Me Guy, beautiful, beautiful website. Is it .com, Richard?
Yes, talktomeguy.com.
All right, and all of you, thanks for joining us. And we'll be talking next week with Lita Lee. All of you loved her and wanted her back. We'll be talking about nutrition and enzymes and what else, Richard?
I bet the subject of radiation is going to come up. And we'll probably be talking to Lita about her book that she wrote.
About
radiation.
Yes, absolutely. So thank all of you for joining us. I've had a
thank you, everybody. Thank you very much, Barbara. This was very fun.
Thank you for having me, Richard and Sherry. Thank you.
The archive will be up probably within an hour or so you can listen to the show again. And if you love the show, you're part of our audience, then direct your friends to go to Blog Talk Radio under Sound Health Options, and the archives are there, and they're free.
Thank you very much, everybody. Have a great Sunday.
Thanks, Richard. I'm closing down now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.